I've been on hiatus doing some creative things that I hope you guys get to see in the world someday. But in the meantime, I'm so excited to be back. It feels so good to be back here with new guests and a slightly new format. Go catch up on my older episodes if you haven't already. There's some big lols in there. And speaking of big lols, I have a really good guest for you today. Some would say an iconic comedian, but to me, he's just my slightly mean cousin. His name is David Cross. And by the way, before we get started, I need to just remind everyone that I want to hear the things that you hate. The more obscure and weirder and specific, the better. So so send me your gripes. You can find me on Instagram at Aviva Yael, or Everything is Annoying. You can find me on Twitter at Vivers, V-E-E-V-E-R-S. I have a website, everythingisannoying.com. There's a contact page. But however you find me, just like letter rep, I care about these things. And I'm going to use, I started using you guys' peeves in the speed rounds for my guests. So hit me up, drop them in. Okay, let's get into it. My couple gripes this week. My first one is expensive coffee. And I know that that's so basic, bitch, and blah, blah, blah. Everybody hates expensive coffee. But coffee to me is like the one thing that I won't give up if I'm on a diet or like a health kick or self-care. Like I'll give up alcohol. I'll give up sugar. I'll give up whatever the fuck, but I will never give up coffee. You know, I'm a writer. It is my life force. But on top of that, what it's really also about is that I'm obsessed with the ecosystem of my local coffee shop. I live in West Hollywood. It's a blue bottle. So I see celebrities there on the regs. And also just other couples and people that, I've been quietly wondering about for like years. And so I love that ritual. I love getting up. I get up at 7:30 every day. I go to my coffee place at 8:15. I go to the gym at 9:30. Like I have my routine and it's part of my life and I can't start my day without my latte. However, I work really hard and I've worked really hard all these years so that I can afford these things. But my fucking lattes with the tip are $6.25 a day. That is, and I take about 5 days off of coffee out of the whole year, and it's like when I'm traveling or like sick, literally. I never miss one. So you know what that comes out to is $2,250 a year in that budget. And I won't cut it. I've cut other things so that I can make up for this. But that's a fucking couch. Like that's healthcare. So, expensive coffee, kiss my ass. Life was so much easier when I was in my 20s and I could just drink Bustelo at the deli, who cared, but whatever. Second one, also a low-hanging fruit, also a big doy, but also something that we all feel, which is bad airport etiquette. Now, there's a million different incarnations of this, obviously putting your feet up on the chairs and shit is insane. But bare feet? Like, what? You're a walking, like... You're a walking disease. Like, get the fuck out of here with your bare feet. You know you're going to TSA. Put those socks on. Pack them in. You know you're going on an airplane. I have seen people with bare feet walk into the goddamn airplane bathroom. Do you know what's on? Do you know what's in there? Everything. It is so psychotic to me. Like, I've actually wanted to, like, yell at people. I'm like, what are you doing? But none of my business, but you guys are crazy. And then they put those bare feet up on the walls and up on the seats and up on the chair. People are fucking disgusting, but also packing insanely smelly food, also rude, yelling on calls. No one loves to hear a telephone call. Why are you yelling? Like, you don't like to hear it. Why are you doing it? And then this is no joke. This is no fucking joke. Three different times that I've been in an airport bathroom while someone is talking on speakerphone, like with toilets flushing. It's insane. That's insane. Also, anytime I see anyone walking through TSA without socks is like, I get like psychosomatic gangrene from it. Also, if you're sitting in an aisle seat or a window seat, don't put your arms on the armrest if there's someone in the middle seat. That is, they're already suffering. Like, have some compassion. And then also, this is my big one. This is like my really big one. So I fly mostly between New York and LA. And I know this sounds a little bit douche, but I kind of always see somebody that I know, like at either LaGuardia, JFK, or LA. And That's like a liability for me. And it could be somebody like in passing, someone I've worked with, I've run into clients there. At one time I saw my ex-boyfriend's new girlfriend. Like, you never know who's going to be on your plane. There's a hottie. There could be a hottie there that I had a crush on. That happened to me one time. Long story short, I've learned to dress up when I get on a plane. And I really don't understand how people just go out in public in their pajamas and their pile fabrics and just fucking, you know, people are going on the plane like with their pillows and teddy bears and blankies and binkies and bare feet. And and it's like, grow up, just dress up like a little. That's all I'm asking. You don't have to make this your bedroom. We're not here for you. It's just, I think it's kind of just slobby and disgusting. And listen, I understand wanting to be comfortable, like especially on an international flight, but there's ways to do it without just like looking like a human fart. I actually use my flight time to exercise some decorum, and I treat that shit like a catwalk. Like, when I'm walking on the plane, I want to look cute. So yeah, you'll never see me in pile fabrics and slippers on a plane. And then my third one, final one, I'm sorry if I sound like a white hot cunt, but that's just, I can't get over it. Just people are barnyard animals. Okay, last one. When you're reading like a screen on your phone, and then another notification pops up and you accidentally hit the notification, and then it opens up this whole entire other app, and then you have to close it and then go back to your original thing. And it's like so distracting and annoying, especially if you're looking at like a map or you're like trying to, it's just the worst. So like those notifications, they bug the shit out of me. Okay, that's it. I'm done. Okay, let's welcome David. He's got some funny things to say, I assume. And just one thing I want to say about him also, by the way, is a lot of people think he's just like sort of a dick, but I know him as a family member, and he's actually so kind and like so gentle and generous. And he's one of the few people that I know in real life who is always present. Like, he is so present. When you talk to him, he's listening, he's engaged. Even if he doesn't agree with you, he considers your words, which is a lot more than what other people do. I mean, I myself look at my phone while everybody's talking to me, and it's something I'm desperately trying to change. But David is just a really, you know, he takes care of a lot of people. He's an amazing dad. He's a great husband. He is the best dad. I love watching him dad. So anyways, I hope you enjoy this interview. You and Amber are like a definite intellectual match. Like, why are you laughing?
I wasn't expecting you to say that. I was expecting something more.
You wanted me to talk about how hot you guys are?
No.
What did you think I was going to say?
That we were coming from very different places or something to that effect.
You know, it's funny. I've known you for a long time. And you are one of the smartest people that I know, and you've always been hyper political. And it's just so funny to watch you guys kind of spar, but maturely within the context of a marriage, because not afraid of you. And I'm so used to my friends like not just going in on their husbands on that kind of stuff. They just kind of throw their hands up like, whatever. But you guys totally disagree, but you're so functional about it. So it's like, it's
we
cool.
have to be. I mean, that's important. You know, we have boundaries as respecting each other. And sometimes they're crossed, more often by me. but I've also learned from her. We listen to each other.
Well, I just know how bad the beef is between the Bernie Bros and Hillbots, and you two are peak those. So I applaud you for being the Romeo and Juliet of politics. Hopefully there's no double suey at the end. Anyways, we're going to switch gears. Let's get into your pet peeves. What is burning your buns this week, or just in general?
People who go up the subway steps and then they stop right there at the entrance as they kind of look around or try to get their burn. Like, they literally stop at the last step. Sometimes they're on their phone.
In New York, I feel like it's actually like a health hazard. Like, it's dangerous.
Absolutely. And it makes me want to, you know, check them, you know?
Like, just body check?
Yeah, body check as I'm walking past. And like, why am I, now I've got to do that little kind of half step skip thing around them. Like, you know, come on, man. That bothers me. And people who put back an empty container will never not irritate me. Like, you know, a thing of milk in the fridge that's now it's empty.
Or who does that?
Amber, and or like jelly. There's literally no jelly. You use the last of jelly, and then you put it back in the any you know a box, a cardboard box with you know oatmeal packets of oatmeal.
Yeah.
And you go to get oatmeal, and there's just an empty.
That
box.
Would drive me. That is such a good one. That would drive me fucking crazy.
And then attendant with that is not replacing the thing you use the last of.
Yeah. 100%.
And obviously number one is toilet paper, but anything. Any...
Toilet paper is like, that's egregious.
That's number one.
Yeah. That's just, you're fucking someone over. Like you're, yeah. you are, they are fucked.
It's inconsiderate and thoughtless and
childish.
I don't know. I mean, I've had lots of roommates over the years and you learn when you have roommates, you learn how to behave around roommates, you know?
I could never get up from an empty roll and look at it and just walk away. Like I could never do that to someone, even myself, obviously, right. But I would just feel too guilty.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't think people, I think, maybe they just don't learn to figure out how to remember, but they, I don't think anybody's like, fuck the next person in here. They're on their own. I don't think anybody's intentionally doing that.
And also just to speak to that, you know, people stopping dead ass in, on the subway. Like, first of all, in New York, you should be able to like torch someone with a flamethrower for doing that because it's so rude. And they, and also, but it goes
where,
for
where
any...
Do you get, are you carrying the flamethrower on you just in case? Or is there one available at the top of the stairs?
I mean, they should pass them out until people learn their lessons because this city is no joke.
Where are we going to get the money for that? there's
Bernie.
Well, there's like 8.5 million people in this city. You want 8.5 million flamethrowers?
I just watched The Good Place, so I'm imagining like if I could pick my afterlife, I'd be perfectly happy being full time employed.
I see what you're
organizing
saying.
Organizing a vigilant army of flamethrowers.
But are you back on Earth in a? Is it a spirit or are you inhabiting somebody else's body or?
I guess I'm dead and this is a world that's above the clouds. So it's the Christian heaven.
Right.
Everybody lives above the clouds in Christian heaven, right?
Some people who are a little overweight live in the middle of the clouds, but.
It's so weird. That's the one thing I like about being Jewish is like my dad's always like, when you're dead, you're dead. Like,
well, Jews have the concept of hell, though, have a concept of punishment. It's not the Christian one, but they have over the years gone back and forth with the concept of heaven, not heaven, I'm sorry, hell, and to sort of explain, to make people feel better about, you know, the Pharaoh and the Spanish Inquisition and Hitler and, you know, very the pogroms and things like that.
And also it's all steeped in like hell on earth. Like this, you have to get out of your own living hell while you're on earth to find peace. Like that's your mission.
Is that like a Kabbalah thing or is that more Kabbalah or is
no,
that
no,
Talmud?
No. I mean, I'm totally boiling the entire religion down to like what my rabbi talks about. But yeah, and I'm a pretty... You know, I go to temple once a year on Yom Kippur, but I would say that that's...
Do you do any networking? I know you go to temple in L.A.
I will tell you this. I did try to find out where Larry David went before I joined. I'm a petty bitch. But, you know, my spirituality has to be coupled with A-listers. That's...
And were you successful?
I've never seen him. So,
but are you at his synagogue? Do you go?
I am, but you know what? Actually, so the synagogue is, I don't want to blow up a spot, so I'm not going to say which one it is.
Is it in Beverly Hills? Or?
I'm not there. You know what?
Well, there got to be a
there's
dozen,
stalkers
right?
out there. No, there's tons, but the one that I signed up for years ago was like a country club. Like it was too expensive.
Yeah.
And it's sort of a comforting thing. Like I feel like if the family was out in LA and we were all members, that it would kind of feel more community or it's just a comfort thing. For me, but none of my family lives in LA. And this is really funny, but a friend of mine tipped me off that there's a free Yom Kippur service at the Laugh Factory.
I would hope it's free. Jesus.
No, but do you know about this?
I don't.
It's amazing. Like, even if you're not religious, I mean, I don't consider myself religious, but I have like I do like to identify with my Jewishness. Like, yeah.
Well, Jamie's Israeli, you know, Jamie Masada.
Yeah. And he's there.
Yeah.
And it's this lovely service. And it's so funny because I go every year and everybody lines up. It's really fun. And it's one of, it's really joyous. The cantor is female.
Does everybody do a tight five?
No. They have the same really sort of this gentle rabbi and this like hippie woman, blonde cantor. And they sing and everybody's singing and dancing. And it's like very upbeat. It's really fun and it's gentle and it doesn't feel religious. And it's all about being kind and giving back and, you mm-hmm. know, thinking of the poor and sort of like this, the basic principles that anybody could feel good about in any religion.
Sure.
It's just like, you know, it's my people. I don't know. I feel good. It looks like everybody I ever went to Hebrew school with when I was a kid, but just grown up, like still kind of.
You're just describing Jews.
You know, we have ass. That line is full of people with good butts.
Really?
That is the one thing. Yeah. One thing that I've really noticed over the years is we have big lips and juicy booties. And I love that about us.
Okay.
But the other thing about that service that's so nice is, you know, you're walking into a tone and Jerry Seinfeld's like, hey, welcome. You know what I mean? Like everybody's on the wall and all these like old comic icons and stuff. And it's just a good vibe. Although the older people always fast. And so, I swear to God, every year, like at least three people pass out.
Yeah.
Like every year. And then afterwards they break out the Manischewitz and you can go upstairs and eat and like kibitz and stuff. And Greenblatt's is right next door. So mm-hmm. There's like food, blah, blah, blah. But speaking of iconic comedians, I guess I should ask you this. I don't want to make you talk about work, but I posted, you know, I let people know that I was going to be interviewing you and everybody wanted to know about Tobias Funke. But one good question that really came in was, which I don't know this about you. And I'm kind of just personally curious, who is your icon? Like, who is your comic icon?
I mean, I have a few that I was, you know, inspired by and that I just think are amazing, pure comic geniuses. I was hugely influenced by Andy Kaufman.
Mm.
And then the idea of Lenny Bruce, not necessarily his material per se, but what he did, and Richard Pryor and Jonathan Winters, and then Bill Hicks. He was very inspirational, and Carlin too. So those are the dead ones.
I guessed Carlin for you.
Carlin was huge, and Bill Hicks was the only one that I had a relationship with. I knew him, so all those other guys influenced me kind of from afar. He was influenced me, you know, while I was in his presence too. And as far as living, you know, a lot of my peers, and then, you know, a lot of other people that were influential in slightly lesser ways, but we're still, as a whole, we're influential, you know, and all the folks that I came up with in Boston, you know, it was a good time.
One other thing I'm actually just thought of is, are there any like young kids that you like in comedy right now?
Oh, there's a bunch. I mean, Shane Torres, Sam Jay, Sam Morrill. I mean, there's so many.
Do you know Julio Torres?
Oh, he's great. Yeah.
He's great. I'm all up on his share right now.
He's great.
Comedy feels really different right now.
How so?
There's more diversity in terms of what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I guess there's this sort of like new energy that was injected into it just around the time that Broad City came out. Like, I remember thinking like, oh God, it feels so good to see chicks just like being gross and being mm-hmm. themselves and being dumb idiots, like the same way that guys are always portrayed.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Like they're basically like workaholics. Just, they're like the guys from Workaholics, but they're just two idiots and you hate them and you love them. And I was like, this is so refreshing. This is how mm-hmm. real life is. This is actually how we talk to each other too.
Right.
And so once that came out, I guess I started noticing like more younger mm-hmm. comedians at that point. Obviously, you know, times are changing quickly and terminology is changing and what's acceptable is changing. And as a comedian, I imagine, especially an older, you know, more iconic comedian, you have to stay current, not necessarily in your content, but in the way that you treat things, because culture changes like every 10 years or whatever. So things that were super groundbreaking, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago are like either irrelevant or maybe even like offensive now, mm-hmm. you know? And you don't know that at the time. You're going along and, you know, it's kind of like Biden. Like Biden probably thought he was being really progressive with certain things, but you look back 30 years and they were the opposite of that. You know what I mean? You just can't tell. Like it's all contextual. It just feels really exciting and new. And like the voices that are coming out, even on SNL, are really good. Also, Bowen Yang, have you seen him on SNL? Bowen Yang?
No.
Oh, God. After the show, I'll send you some links. You're going to die. This guy's so fucking funny. It's just interesting to see these younger people that aren't problematic. Because right now it feels like everyone's looking for someone to be problematic so they can just like destroy them. Like I see people get perfectly innocent, well-meaning people get absolutely fucking annihilated. Mm-hmm. They get canceled. It's part of the cancel culture. And there, you should definitely get canceled for certain things. But people don't want to let people come back from that. Like there's no lesson learning. There's no like teaching moments. It's like, no, fuck you, die, you're done. Get the fuck out of here.
Absolutely.
And it's really annoying to watch, but it's also like so unproductive because if someone's like, oh yeah, okay, I'm a better person now, or I've learned something, or not even better person, just like, okay, new, like, got it. Thank you. Let it be. You know what I mean? But a lot of these younger kids aren't experienced. They're not going to get canceled because they're part of the culture that's canceling people. So they're like hyper aware of all these things. I don't know if I'm articulating this in the right way, but it's just a different voice. It's like, I can see the culture changing through our young comedians, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying. I don't know that I've experienced that. I definitely see way more diversity than there was.
Do you know John Early and Kate Berlant?
Not well, but I know of them. Yeah,
I'm really into them.
I know John from, I know his work from Search Party, which I thought was amazing.
That really show. Can I tell you something? First of all, I'm obsessed
you
with Aaliyah.
You may.
Aaliyah. How she's a great actress.
She's great.
She's fantastic. Fucking amazing.
She's great in Amber's movie in Painted Black.
Yeah.
She's really good. Wicked, you know, sharp, smart.
And super fierce, funny.
Very funny and fiercely, you know, individualistic. And she's great. She's great.
And I love how she uses her Instagram because she just posts art. Nothing else, really. Also, she's so hot. Like, she's so sexy. Yeah, Aaliyah, I know you're not listening, but please come on my podcast. She's so good on Search Party. And
they're all good. Meredith is great, too. Hagner.
Oh, the blonde?
Yeah.
The blonde. Oh, she's amazing. That show made me feel, when I watched it, like I killed someone and then hid a dead body somewhere in my house and was, like, trying to act normal about it. Like, it gave me that level of anxiety. Like, I even had dreams about it. I was like, did I kill someone? Like, it's so anxiety inducing. I went to go see a movie that she, I believe she co-wrote it and Miguel Arteta directed it, called Duck Butter. Mm-hmm. Did you hear about this?
I did hear about it. I didn't see it.
It's really good. It's simple premise, but she's just, I hope she gets super rich and famous if she's not already. So we're going to do a speed round. And a speed round, these are things that listeners send in to me, things that annoy them. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just list them off. I'm going to rattle them off, and you're mm-hmm. going to tell me if it annoys you or not. And if it does, you can say why, but we just got to keep it brief.
That sounds very entertaining.
I mean, I try to like interject a little.
Ready to be entertained, listener.
Okay. Curly parsley.
Ambivalent.
Really?
Yeah. As opposed to what? What's curly? What is
Italian parsley? The nice, flat, flavorful parsley, which is sold right next to it.
I'm not an herb guy. I don't like a lot. Most herbs.
Chewing on a curly parsley doesn't bother you?
I guess a little bit, but not enough to send it in to a podcast, I suppose. But
okay. What about when people say "careful" after you've tripped?
That's a good one. That's a good one. Yes.
Like, fuck off.
That's a good one.
An empty stapler.
Boy, I can't tell you the last time I stapled something.
I know. They're like, but yeah, they're sort of benign. They're sort of like fax machines now. But imagine going to staple something and there's no staples in it.
I can't even. I can't. I won't do that to myself.
Baby voice.
Hate it. Hate it.
It's disgusting.
I hate baby voice. There's a lot of vocal things that bother me. Glottal fry, the upspeak, valley girl type of thing.
Wait, excuse me, attacked.
Well, you know.
Wait, what's glottal?
That's this one when you've got that thing. Oh, and especially
that makes me sexist towards women when I hear that. I swear to God.
Yeah, I hate glottal fry. And the fact that like about 20 years ago, maybe even a little longer, that became a staple of audio ads, you know, that kind of female, you know, disinterested voice kind of at Carlington's Milk, we don't just take regular milk, you know, whatever the thing is. And it's really ubiquitous and you hear it a lot. And yeah, those vocal things in particular.
I still feel attacked. Okay. What about calling the first 10 years of the 2000s the aughts?
Yes and no. yes, it is kind of annoying, but what it's a shortcut and I'll take it. You know what I mean? But
it's
not great. I wish there was an alternative, but there isn't. So it's just an easier way to quickly speak.
Yeah. But then it's kind of like, oh, back in the aughts, it's just,
I get it. I get what that person,
it's like borderline, like when people start speaking like kind of fake British American, you know, it just sounds like one of those terms. And then kind of loosely related to this, my friend Christina Black wrote this one in. She can't stand it when people say 2020 instead of 2020. That doesn't bother me, but I'm just,
I've never thought about it.
2020.
That doesn't bother me.
Okay. People who over enunciate their words.
Yes, I don't like that either. And also kind of chew like that, you know? And it's usually
disgusting.
That kind of like Burning Man type of, like they're grinding their teeth like they're coming down off of some meth or whatever. And yeah, I don't like that at all.
I also hate slow talkers and people that draw out their S's. Really fucking annoying. Like, get on with it. What do you want to say? Say it.
One of the things I can't stand, and I am being a hypocrite here because I do it as well, is over explaining something. Like when you're trying to say, usually it's like an anecdote. You're telling a story like, oh my God, you got to hear this thing that my friend did. And then you start adding details that like, no one cares. No one cares that, you know, there was a 79 Ford Taurus there and that it was, you know, clunking down the street. No,
you do get really descriptive, but I've never found it to hurt your stories. I think you need to give yourself more credit because you point out details.
I know that I do it.
You
do do it.
And maybe it drags it into like a little bit of a Shaggy Dog, you know, area, but there you don't.
I'll be saying to myself, like, shut up, just get to the point, you know.
No, but you're actually like one of the few people I would excuse from that.
That's good.
Okay. People who back into parking spots.
Yeah, not, I mean, it doesn't, I get it, but yes, yeah, I get it. It doesn't kill me, but I know of that kind of like, come on. Oh, and with that, I'll tell you what really bothers me is when you're in a line to park and you're in a garage and let's say there's 8 levels and somebody's creeping along the first, it's just like,
Looking for a spot.
Like, just go. We all know that there's empty spots up at the top because there's that little sign that says, you know, 104 spots available. Just go.
It's so
and walk
rude.
Down some stairs or go down so the elevator. Rude. And there's a line of cars behind you. Just go and walk a couple extra feet.
People are so rude. I do have one. I was in a Whole Foods parking lot a couple years ago. And it was like people, it was a small one. And so people were circling. Yeah. And like, in LA, there's like a Trader Joe's that people get into like road rage, like incidents and stuff. Like it's a thing. It's actually a thing in LA. But
well,
this
there's
Whole
barely
Foods...
any parking at the one in Silver Lake, the Trader Joe's, or at least there was.
Oh, yeah. And it's
back
a fucking war zone. It's a war zone. And the same
there's
for the one
to park.
On La Brea.
You have to go across to where the Gelson's is, across the street, park over there. And then you're
same
lugging...
on La Brea. You got to go over to fucking Vaughn's to get into Trader Joe's. Anyways, so This is like a Whole Foods that has a really small parking lot. And I'd been circling, but not doing the slow thing. I was just being a normal person about it. And this fucking douchebag rolls up in a convertible BMW and pulls into my spot as I was pulling in, and he cuts in, you know? And then, so for some reason, I was so pissed that I just started laughing. And like, it was the middle of summer, so my window was down so he could hear me laughing. And he goes, "Why don't you go fuck yourself?"
He came ready.
Like,
he was ready.
Just turned around just to yell at me for wanting to.
He knew what he did was bad.
Because he knew that I was about to be like, "Yell, motherfucker." And he started laughing so hard that actually he got paralyzed. And like, then I parked right in front of the store, so he would have had to walk past me to get in, and he just sat in his car and then he just drove off. And I was good, bitch. But it was so funny. And also, you know, to his credit, I've always wanted to do that to someone, just be like, fuck off, like, just, you know, go live. I don't do it, but I kind of respected his tenacity. Like, you're gonna do this, you better go all the way in and just curse me out. Okay, and then this is the last one, and this one comes from me, and you might not know what it is, but these fuckers get on my nerves. I can't stand looking at them. Curly-haired horses.
I don't know what that is.
Ugh. They're disgusting. They're basically like horse poodles. There's a breed of horses that have curly hair. But if you don't know what they are, then that can annoy you. All right, so anyways, all right, we'll wrap up the speed round. That was a good speed round. Okay, and then now it's time for the very last thing you have to do. This is my favorite segment. It's called Great Jewish Women.
Okay.
Great Jewish women, they're really great, yeah.
Who's your favorite great Jewish woman? Alive or dead?
Oy, great Jewish women, gosh. Is Helen Keller Jewish?
Actually, probably. Keller? I don't know. No, that's Geller. Babs?
No.
Bet.
God, no. So you're thinking from the world of entertainment. I was thinking
It could be anyone. I mean,
radiologist Pharrell, or something.
Well, they have to be known, but like Pharrell said Gloria Steinem.
Let's go older and in political. Okay. The woman who was hanged for treason, spying for Russia. The husband and wife. God damn it. What's her name? You know, Dan, their son that made books about...
The Rosenbergs?
The Rosenbergs. Thank you.
No one's going to know who
Ethel Rosenberg?
Ethel Rosenberg.
Yeah, Ethel Rosenberg.
And her husband, Julius.
Yes, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg.
They were accused of spying on behalf of the Soviet Union. So that's who you think is a great Jewish woman?
Yes, yes, yes.
You're such an asshole. You know what I mean?
Sorry, I didn't say Bette Midler.
That's my mom. Wow. Well, I hate that great Jewish woman segment.
Sorry.
But I appreciate it.
But did they really spy for the Soviet Union?
Why do you consider her a great Jewish woman?
She's not great for America, but for what? I mean, that's pretty ballsy, you know? That's a tough thing to do. Yeah.
Can't believe that you turned my super shallow, hyper light segment
Ethel Rosenberg
into a dedication to
Google her.
Someone.
Just get a Wikipedia
page
up there.
Who was executed for treason. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you had fun.
Sometimes things don't go your way and, you know, life deals you a bad hand and you get on with it. You move on. You know, you don't dwell. Get up, dust yourself off, and, you know, better days ahead.
I hope this doesn't hurt your career because you've been doing really well. No, I really appreciate it. It was actually fun to interview you.
Yeah, no, it was fine.
It was just fine.
Was
Thank
fine.
You. What a great compliment. You're so nice. You did a fine job, Aviva.
I didn't say that.
Okay. Well, I love you. And can you give me a little...
I'll see you at Thanksgiving.
Christmas. I'll see you at your party.
Okay. Yep. How long are you in town for?
I'm staying for the party this year. So I'm here for a week, and this episode will come out after your party. So it's fair for me to say this, but I brought homemade boudin from Cajun
Country.
Oh,
I know. Country. I heard you in Atlanta. You were talking about that. That's amazing.
I did
that it. That sounds awesome. I'll be going for that one for sure.
Oh, I thought of you for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I got a really amazing cookbook from like this original, real, like 70s Cajun. He's the first guy to write.
That's
like
great of
really
you. That's a good.
We're talking about David and Amber and Amir Questlove co-host a Christmas, like a white elephant party every year that our family flies in for. And it's really miserable. I've cried so many times. Every year I cry because somebody gets my $1,000 gift certificate that
it's
I want
for
those
shoes.
It's
not yours, Aviva. It's not yours. It's, twice you've cried over a pair of shoes.
No, but it's really fun, and people bring really creative gifts.
Oh,
and
great. Well, Mir brings, like, he's one of the top. Remember when he, I don't know if you're around for this one. This is an early one, because we've been doing this for a long time now, but his 50 favorite cereals. Were you at that one?
Oh my God.
Yeah, 50, like literally 50 boxes of.
So, So Questlove ups the ante. So people will bring really creative stuff. Like Parker Posey one year brought this is awesome. She brought like a pot, like a really nice pot, like an expensive kind of, pot,
yeah.
like a La Crusade or something. Yeah. But she filled it with shroom soup, like mushroom soup, and said it may or may not have shrooms in it. Like, you'll find out. So people bring really like creative, funny gifts, but Amir always brings something that like kind of makes people turn into like demonic. Like,
yeah, it's very Lord of the Flies. some of his stuff.
Can you just briefly explain like how the game works?
Derek Brown invented it, but it's basically like a white elephant thing. You have unwrapped gifts. Everybody presents their gift, puts it in the middle of the pile, and then you do your first round. You pass dice, and if you roll doubles, you get to take a gift, and you put it in front of you. And there's very specific rules. You can't hide it. You can't obscure it. It has to be, you know, visible to everybody. And then that gives you an idea of what's kind of popular. Then you play with a clock, you know, whatever it is, 15 minutes, I can't remember. And then you get to pick a present from somebody else's pile. And then, like,
you get to start stealing other people's gifts.
Yeah.
On the
and then there's
round.
There's an envelope. There's some envelopes. One envelope has free gift, but you know, those are sealed. And then an envelope has, like, you got to give one of your gifts, or an envelope is take two gifts, whatever it is. And,
or immunity.
Or immunity, yeah. And that was Amir's. I think Amir came up with that one. And then, so you're doing that, and it's pretty hectic and tense. And then the last, like, 5 minutes, you introduce another pair of dice, and you have 5 minutes left. And people, and then by then, it's absolutely clear what the top gifts are. And people are screaming and yelling because you've got multiple pairs
couples
of dice.
Couples are fighting. Like, and, people are,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, and you got people from both ends, and you can't see what's happening down there. And then all of a sudden, somebody's... And you have to have it in your hands. That's by the countdown, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You have to have the thing in your hand. You can't be halfway there reaching for it. But if you have it in your hand, and if somebody's getting it from you, you can't let them... You can't block them. You can't
obscure
it.
Well, that was the year that I cried because somebody ripped it out of my hands at the buzzer, and there was two different sides, and half the party, by the way, was coming up to me going, that was so fucked up. That was so fucked up. Those were yours. And then
I thought it was legit. I thought she was legit to take it, and she had it at the buzzer.
Yeah, all you guys ganged up on me. But the other half of
you.
The party was like, no, those were your shoes. But anyway, Zara
disagree.
And I are totally
I disagree.
Friends now. We became friends through the crying over this pair of shoes. It took 3 years for people to trust me to go to this party again.
Well, there are people that are not invited back because they... there have been a couple people that's like they've been caught, or we've caught them, or somebody caught them. I mean, everybody's facing, you know, each other inward, you know, like kicking a gift underneath the couch. Oh yeah, that happened. And those people are not invited back.
That is so lame. That's not really the spirit. Lame. And also, that really takes the fun out of it. I didn't know there were people cheating, but I'm glad that you caught them.
There were people cheating. Yep. We've it's happened a couple times. And people who aren't invited back just because of the personality that they exhibit during that game is like, whoa. I mean, there have been a handful of people who are like, that was fucked up, where just people are, not cool.
Yeah.
And some people, and combining that with being drunk, and it's just,
I mean,
not
that's
good.
The thing too. Like, maybe I'm a baby, but I have a good attitude, and like,
almost everybody
awesome
does.
Gifts. It makes me happy when somebody takes my gift, you know?
We've been doing this for years, but there have only been, 6 or 7 people that we've said.
86.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Yep.
Well, that was fun interviewing my cousin. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Let's wrap this up with something that I like this week. So this week, I really like white guilt. I like white guilt, and I'm glad that I have it. It's kind of what keeps me being a responsible citizen. And, I don't mean that you have to feel guilty for being born white. Obviously, that's not your fault. Your skin color has nothing to do with you. You're born into it. But what you can feel guilty about on some level is that because you were born with white skin in this country, you were born into a little bit easier situation than, say, people who weren't. Obviously, there's a million exceptions to the rule, but this is like our laws are like shaped around skin color. Our class system is shaped around skin color. It's grandfathered in from previous generations. But I just really feel like you got to be on your toes helping others have a more fair life, especially if you have a really fair life. And I have a lot of rich white friends that talk a lot of game, but they don't really give a shit. Like, we do have the luxury of choosing. We can opt in and out of struggle, whereas other people live in struggle because of their skin color, and shit isn't fair. And frankly, I can't believe anybody who isn't white isn't insane like every day. I'd be filled with rage if I had to deal with all those microaggressions. And I mean, not that we don't have our own, contextual ones, but the point is that I think if you're aware that you were given a certain lot in life, it can be a catalyst for helping other people and for fighting in this country, fighting for racial and economic justice. And if you aren't doing anything to help anyone else because you're in your nice, comfy white skin, you're just kind of taking up space. Like, you're kind of garbage. Like, I literally have friends that will fly to Africa and feed children over there, and I'm not, or help educate. And it's amazing and it's inspiring. They shouldn't not do that, but they won't go to Crenshaw. Do you know what I mean? There's starving kids in our own neighborhood. So that kind of stuff, it's like, let's let that white guilt in. Let it guide you. For me, it's helped make me a better friend, a better employer, a better employee, a better citizen, a better activist, and just a better listener. Like, it's okay. We have to constantly open our ears and listen to other people and, gauge how we are carrying ourselves in the world. So anyways, shout out to White Guilt. I'll see you guys back here real soon. Thank you.
I certainly hope that the Iranians are smart enough to go after all the buildings that have Trump's name on them. What do you think? Have a good day. Have a good night. Bye.